Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
That's right, we can't do it alone. Welcome to MPH Radio. As the voice of MPH Radio on the 10th day of December, the year 2022, we are very honored to be able to come into your homes this evening where we can represent the underserved communities. Our theme today is Part 1, Deion Sanders, Jackson State University, and HBCUs. We'd like to entertain and fill in this particular missing page of history as relates to what just recently took place in terms of a well-known football player, his contribution to a particular HBCU university, and how it is having a ramification on how people are viewing HBCUs and his decision. We'd like for you to weigh in later on during this program, but like always, our order for today will include what is freedom? That's giving you something to think about. MPH Black Mini Facts for Susie. A message to the community from Alex Joyner. And then we'll discuss our theme, Deion Sanders, Jackson State University, and HBCUs. That's our order for today. So at this point in time, we're going to get started with this program, and we invite you to join us by calling in to 818-337-0016. Hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. This is MPH Radio, Missing Pages History. We were just going to give you one particular general definition of what some people call what freedom is or how they have defined it. And many people believe that freedom is being able to do what you want and have the means to do it as long as you don't impose it on others. What do y'all think about that concept? Freedom of having the ability and means to do those things that you want as long as you don't impose it on others. I just want to give you something to think about. Think about that and later on the program, tell us what you think about that concept of freedom. At this point in time, like always, we actually get your pen and paper, and we'll just jot down some little MPH Black Men facts, history that you may not know about. At this point in time, for this week, the 5th to the 10th of December, we're going to bring in Susie, and she will share with you some of our Black Men facts for today's program. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. Hi. I'll be giving you the Black Minute Facts for December the 10th, 2022, which the first one starts on the 5th of December, which is where Nelson Mandela, activist and first president of Azania, South Africa, died in 2013. Also on that date, we had the first All African People's Conference held in Ghana in 1958. And also the National Council of Negro Women was founded in 1935. And on the 6th of December, we had R.B. Spikes patent automatic gear shift. This was in 1932. On the 7th, we had 35 Africans murdered by racists in Mississippi in 1874. And also on this date, Antonio Maceo, Cuban freedom fighter, died in 1896. And on December the 8th, we had Roberto Sobukwe, was born in 1925. And also Lemon Squeezer patented J.T. White in 1896. On the 9th, we had the PBS, which is the Pinchback of Louisiana, becomes acting governor in 1872, and also Tanzania Political Independence Day in 1961. And on the 10th, we had the Namibia Women's Day, dozens of women were killed and wounded during mass protests in 1954. And also Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, was established in 1956. And the last one for December the 10th, Dr. Martin Luther King accepted the Nobel Peace Prize. And all this comes from the PRP. December 2021 calendar. Those are your Black Minute Facts for December the 10th, 2022.
I would like to thank Susan for Black Minute Facts. At this point in time, we hope you have learned something. We're going to take a station break by bringing to you Music with a Message. And when we come back, we'll have Alex Joyner speaks to the community. This is MPH Radio.
Children's laughter
would like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. Find your strength in the people. That's the greatest love that you can have. As we stated before we went on a break, we'll be coming back with Alex Joyner, and he will give you a message to the community. Brother Alex, we will now turn this mic over to you. What is your message to the community for this program today? Brother Alex, welcome to MPH Radio.
Well, again, Mr. Lee, I would like to thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to speak to the community on some issues that have come about in my life that I've always questioned. Why were we left out of history? Why were so many things not talked about? So again, I appreciate you and Susie for bringing that forth and giving us the opportunity to discuss these things, because this is what is important to our community. And I'd like to thank our guest today who will give us some knowledge and make us understand that all our viewpoints and all our messages count, and we need to take heed in words that are being said today. And in that, I would like to say that in the Bible, Paul references the good fight in 2 Timothy, 4th chapter, 7th verse, where he says, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Fighting the good fight is also about perseverance and continuing, even when the road is hard and the end is uncertain. Colossians, 5th chapter, 5th through the 10th verse. Put on them as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate heart, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another. And if one has a complaint against another, forgive each other, as the Lord has forgiven you. So you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your heart, to which indeed you were called in one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing songs and hymns and spiritual songs, with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in words or deeds, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and Father through him. In celebration of the victory of man over evil that walks the earth. Have we heard the words, you have to fight? You have to fight the good fight to win. Even at graveside services, we honor those who have fought the good fight against sickness and disease before their earthly life was cut short. The good fight always seems to take a toll on the victor and the enemy. It puzzled me as a child until I became a man with a family and responsibility to know that through faith in God, I was in the fight of my life. My good fight, though, had barely begun. Using God's words of love and grace became our armor and shield to win battles no knife or gun could. God's words were all I needed. I am forever in God's army. I will always fight the good fight for my people. The good fight in late August 2021. There was a day that concerned me more than any other. It was the day that Herschel Walker announced himself as a challenging candidate for the United States Senate seat of Georgia. This position was held by the Honorable Reverend Rappel Warner. Warner was born in Savannah, Georgia in 1969. He grew up in a public housing as the 11th of 12 children. Both of his parents, Berlin and Jonathan, were Pentecostal pastors. His father served in World War II and became a small business owner. He often mentioned his mother picking cotton and tobacco in Waycross, Georgia for many summers. After finishing high school, he decided to follow in Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s footsteps by attending Morehouse College, graduating cum laude with a BA in psychology. Then he earned two masters and a doctorate in philosophy from Union Theological Seminary, a school affiliated with Columbia University. Reverend Warnock began his ministry at the Sixth Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, under civil rights leader Reverend John Thomas Porter. Years later, he moved to New York and then to Maryland, serving as assistant pastor, learning the craft of leadership in the church structure. Warnock was called to a senior pastor's position in 2005 at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, truly following MLK's path to his former mentor's congregation. He became the fifth installed pastor there and the youngest person to serve as senior pastor. He still preaches at Ebenezer when he is not in the United States Congress. Warner presided so eloquently over the homegoing service of civil rights icon John Lewis in July 2020 that many were inspired by his remarks of the great things Lewis had done for his country. For Warnock's civil rights protest stands and political activism, Georgia residents found a God-fearing man who would represent the people of Georgia who were just like him. His support of the Affordable Care Act and the John H. Lewis Voting Rights Act brought national attention to his name. Always a warrior for change and a fighter for social justice, Warnock had begun an impressive resume for leadership in faith and political office. In January 2020, he was persuaded to run for senator and won the runoff, thus becoming the first African-American to represent Georgia in the United States Senate. After a brief distinguished tenure of assignments to different committees, his efforts and voting records were appreciated by the citizens of Georgia and the United States. In January 2021, he made the decision to run for the full six-year term in the Senate. He was encouraged by family, citizen, and Senate members as the best choice for Georgia. Even though I am not a resident of Georgia, I follow politics closely, as whatever happens in Congress also affects me. I want to know if they are competent and impartial to serve in the Senate, which affects billions of lives worldwide. So I looked at his record of service to his congregation and to his people of Georgia. I found out he was doing all he could for them. He was fighting the good fight for all on education, health care, transit service, jobs, wealth disparity, and justice issues. Warnock had a full agenda as he fought for the people of Georgia. I went down to Georgia in the spring of 2022 about registering to vote and the problems associated with voting, as the state Congress of Georgia was allegedly engaged in voter suppression. I visited Ebenezer and saw Mr. Warnock speak. I also met with campaign members, talked to him. I found out about a man committed to the fight against social injustices without hate or malice in his message. I found out about a humble man who loved God and helping others. I found a man I could call my brother in the struggle for our people's freedom. As for the candidate in the race, I knew he wasn't from Georgia, but Texas. So I assumed his main interest wasn't about Georgia. He was a much flawed candidate who was mentally, socially, educationally, and ethnically unqualified to serve anywhere in any office of the United States under any condition. He was simply not suited, and the people proved it on December the 6th, 2022. Senator Warnock was in a good fight for all Georgians. On the night of his first race, he did not get that 51% for the victory. Weeks later in the runoff, his vote number would be increased by tens of thousands as a close race went down to the final tally of votes before midnight, conceded with dignity. Yes, it was a hard race, a long wage battle, a tiresome test of faith to represent the people who supported him. At last, victory was his. In his speech, Warnock reminded everyone, I am Georgia. I am the example of the reiteration of its history, of its pearls and promise, of the brutality and the possibility. But because this is America, because we always have a path to make our country greater against unspeakable odds, here we stand together. A man posed in the victory of a good fight sometimes forgets his roots. But I and many others will hold him accountable as he swears to uphold the citizen voices that put him in power. The good fight, but a new one, begins tomorrow as we are all bystanders of freedom. And I thank you.
We'd like to thank Brother Alex for his commentary on today's program, and we'd like to remind all listeners, supporters, and friends of MPH Radio, all views expressed under this segment are totally the views of that particular author. They do not and may not represent the ideas of its members, the radio station, or its affiliates. So again, we'd like to thank Brother Alex for his commentary. And this point in time, we're going to take a station break. And when we come back, we're going to ask all our listening audience to feel free to call in at 818-337-0016. We will entertain our theme tonight, which is Deion Sanders, Jackson State University's and HBCUs. Question becomes, where does Jackson State go from here? We'd like to have your discussion on this phenomenon. This is part one of a two-part series. You're listening to MPH Radio.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which...
That's right. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? Which one would America choose if they had a choice of color? Ha, ha, ha. I think history will answer that question. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. At this point in time, we'd like to have a candid dialogue on this phenomenon that's going on after a great culture personality in the field of sports, Mr. Deion Sanders, former NFL football player as well as a former baseball player, who spent 3 years of his life at a HBCU school, which is Jackson State University. He just made an announcement recently that he'll be leaving to go to a prominent European institution, Colorado State, University of Colorado. And it has created all kind of mixed emotions and issues concerning this whole question of how do we best serve our communities. In this case, our focus will be on HBCUs. And we'd like for you to weigh in on this particular phenomenon, what you think about what had just happened, and what you think the future of the HBCUs will look like, particularly Jackson State, since Brother Deion Sanders has came and left. So we'd like to have that discussion. We're going to open our mic up. We first will go back to Alex. We will start off with him and just get a general take on your general thoughts on what's going on with the leaving of Deion Sanders and he moving on to Colorado University. Alex.
All right. Well, thank you again, Brother Lee. When we look at HBCUs, and I mean the people of color of this nation that have been called many names, whether you are black, African-American, colored, a few names I choose not to even mention, whatever that someone made up a name to called you because your skin tone was a little bit darker than theirs, that you, they said that you were not equivalent to them, and they chose to separate you and put you in another type of institution coming out of the silver. So when we look at the opportunities where the people of color had a chance to go, that became the structure of the HBCUs. Religious organizations, contributed heavily in starting these schools, along with the federal and state government. A lot of private donors stepped in. Because the thing was to educate the Negro of this country, as you were called by many papers in Congress, the blacks, the African Americans, to give you an opportunity to begin on a equal playing field, which was unequal. But to them, it was a feeling of shame because they did not want you in their predominant institutions. So they gave you something, as they called it, separate but equal. But as we know today, separate and unequal. Because you look at the dollars that go to one school and go to the other. Whether it's a business investment from sporting events, whether it's degree programs, whether it's research grants, whatever it is, the dollars are different. There are schools that get many times over what the HBCUs get. And no, this is not fair. It's not a thing of equal enrollment. It's a thing of being equal, period. When Mr. Sanders came to Jackson State University, it's not a small-time school among HBCUs, well known for some of his alumni. When we talk about Congress itself, Benny Thompson, distinguished leader, United States Congress. When we talk about athletics, let's go to Walter Payton. Let's go to Sweetness for a moment. There are many notable alumni from this great university, because all HBCUs are great universities. The failure of them is not because we are not interested in their survival and their movement to the next level, but we are determined by laws, by other outside influences, that these schools do not succeed. That lots of times people want to see these HBCUs fail and do not step in to help, such as St. Paul's up in Virginia. So when you have HBCUs that also have closed because of inadequate funding, because you have states that did not care, because you had a federal government that didn't step up and give them a bigger slice of the pie. Student enrollments have always moved in a positive once dollars were spent on the university. The more you invest in something, the better it is. And that, I thought, was the purpose of the Freedmen's Bureau, to invest more into the colored people of the nation. Make a bigger investment, and you reap a greater reward of its people. But somehow the message got lost over time. And then we had a great young brother. I cannot say enough good things about Dion as far as a player is concerned, because I saw him on the field. I knew what his attitude was. I knew Dion Sanders. Yes, some say he was arrogant. He was king of the hill, loudmouth. But he could back up his playing on the field. He was known as what? Prime time. We watched him because he was an entertainer. He told us what he was going to do, like Muhammad Ali. And he went out there and he did it. So we have to look at the man himself. choosing to go back home to a HBCU and wanting to make things better for the school. 3 years ago makes a big difference when you walk into a program and you get an attitude about how things should be run. We don't know what the situation was in the meeting between coach and school officials. We know that the budget wasn't quite there because he was willing to donate half of his own salary to buy equipment and different things. So we can say what we want today, but we know some part of Mr. Sanders was an open commitment to do what was right for his school. We had got into conversations with HBCUs about getting more money from television rights because HBCUs were being cheated when they played other schools. You are on a unfair playing field when you pay a HBCU coach just a few millions of dollars because this is all you have. Can we truly expect in this era, 20 years ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, the loyalty to a HBU was there? I have to look at many athletes that have moved on from team to team because they got a better deal. We're talking about a coach trying to prove himself. Did he need to be there 5 years? Did he need to be there 10 years? Did he need to be there 20 years to prove that he deserved a higher paying job? Again, I don't know what the negotiations were. I don't know what the talks were. But I'm hoping that Mr. Sanders went over and looked at everything on the table, just as I do. I look at everything, all parts of the contract. And then I make the sensible decision for my future. I know that you're going to hurt some people, and some people are going to be turned off by what you do. But still, if you can continue to contribute, it's not only just to move on to Colorado State and just turn your back on the SWAC, but to look back and say thank you for putting me up to where I am and to give back, because that's where it's needed. It's needed back behind you. You are moving forward, but also you're moving forward with a legacy, and you want that legacy of you being at Jackson State to be a positive one, because there are other role models coming down the road behind you, and they may leave these HBCUs for the bigger payday at another school. So as things get rearranged, we got to really start worrying about keeping these coaches, increasing these athletic budgets, getting more scholarships, getting the alumni more involved, getting the state legislature, the federal government, getting your TV rights, dealing with those, because that's a huge part of revenue. But there are so many things that can be done to make HBCUs more profitable than what they are. But you have to sit down, and your boards have to sit down and realize you have to incorporate with business now and be such a research analyst for different companies that will give you grant money. Open up your doors. Open up your mind. Open up your heart. Because Mr. Sanders is not going to be the only one that leave you. So I would like to see you move forward. And I think Dion is going to be Dion all his life. I expect Prime to be in the spotlight, not just now, but the rest of his life. Because that's the mentality that he has. And I wish that every school had that same initiative. If we can promote things like Jackson State does, if you mention them, the first thing comes to my mind is the Sonic Boom, the band that they have. If you mention otherwise than that, besides Peyton and besides Thompson, there's not too much no I can say about Jackson State. But we have to be known for a lot more than just a dancing band and these HBCUs. That's good for culture, yes. That's wonderful for culture. But we also need to be known for research institutions, finding solutions and moving forward. And with that note, I'd like to move on and hear some more comments today about this subject, because this is deep. And we've been to learn some history today. And I thank you all for contributing.
Thank you, Alex. Next, we'll go to Susie, get her opinion on this phenomenon. We know that based upon what we have heard or seen and information that's out in the general public, all of it does impact and shape our perception of what we think we know. So anyway, Susie, give me your general spin on the leaving of Jackson State University by Deion Sanders.
The only concerns I have, naturally you'd want to go where you could get more money into. He committed himself to this 3 years because you could tell the difference in how the team performed. And on top of it, what I was reading a statement that Jackson State made, that they terminated Deion because of scheduling conflict with the Southwest Atlantic Conference. I don't necessarily understand that. I know what the Southwest Atlantic Conference is, but to me that's a minute point because of the fact once he made a commitment to go to Jackson State, I think he basically held his commitment up. And things never stay the same. He went and put the blueprint there to lift up the self-esteem of the players as well as the school. And basically now everything is on the school to carry forward what he taught them and what they learned from him. And then the other thing I'd like to say, I sometimes wonder if it was a conflict between the president and DR. The fact that when you before now, you knew about the president, but now all of a sudden, since Deion went there, you were getting Deion was getting a lot of recognitions because of what he was doing with the school. And I think somehow, did the president feel a threat by Deion being there? Because it was almost to the point when you heard about the school, you'd like to say Deion was the president. And if that somehow played in DR leaving and going to Colorado, I don't know, but it's just a question that I was thinking about. And also, DR even, he's still doing what he promised he would do because he's working with them with the take on North Carolina Central Eagles in the Celebration Bowl on December the 17th. He may have left, and money may have been one of the motivations, but I think he also, maybe Deion felt that he had met the objective that he wanted. And he'll probably, being an alumni of Jackson State, I think he'll still support him and do what he can to help him. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Susan. You listen to MPH Radio. We have this discussion on Deion Sanders, Jackson State HBCUs. You can feel free to share your opinions on this particular issue by calling in at 818-337-0016. We have some callers lined up. We will bring in our callers as they also be part of this discussion, as this is the first part of a two-part series. We can now bring in caller 6029. Caller 6029, based upon what you have observed and heard, how do you, what is your take from this particular ongoing battle around Deion Sanders leaving Jackson State and going to Colorado University?
You well, I got to tell you, brother, for me, it's a mixed bag. You know, certainly winning things in terms of, you know, moving up the ladder, but certainly there's some legitimacy to making that argument. But on the flip side, you know, one of the problems is that, you know, when you talk about in terms of the mission of, you know, historical black colleges and universities, or you talk about the kind of visibility Dion brought to HBCUs, then certainly in the context of, you know, visibility in terms of making things better for HBCUs in the long run, I think Dion played an immense role in terms of making that a reality. So I think the problem that, you know, so you sort of, you have a sort of balance between, you know, an obligation, you know, to be the best you can be versus the obligation historically of what it is to be a marginalized community. So because Dion had the opportunity in terms of, you know, really bringing something different to Jackson State University, and in that context, also bringing something to HBCUs generally, I'm sort of ambivalent in terms of, you know, him making this particular move. You know, so one of the problems is that we historically, when you talk about, see, one of the things we talk about in terms of the inequality in terms of, you know, funding, you know, one of the things when you talk about, you know, if you have a historic HBCU university playing on school, playing on TV, versus a sort of quote-unquote a larger white school, then the tendency is to pay the white schools considerably more in terms of being on their television, even though they equally contribute to, you know, putting on a product. So I think that Dion could play a big role in terms of sort of equalizing that situation. In other words, he could have demanded, and just in terms of his platform, could demand in terms more in terms of monies for, you know, for historical black colleges and universities. I think he has that kind of power. I think Susie's concerns are very, very apt. I think one of the things is that who knows the politics behind the scene? I mean, one of the things that it is quite conceivable that the president of Jackson State University was threatened by Dion in terms of his platform, his notoriety, you know, his name. So that's a very, very real possibility. So we don't know the sort of know the insides and outs. So for me, brother, I just have I'm sort of torn between a rock and a hard place, because I think I need more information in terms of assessing, you know, precisely, you know, why Dion did what he did. But, you know, but just generally speaking, you know, I would like to have seen him stay at Jackson State University for at least, you know, 3 to 5 more additional years. But of course, that's up to him to decide. But anyway, I'm sort of ambivalent in terms of him leaving. So, and I close with that.
All right, brother. Thanks for your thoughts, Devin Land. We'll be coming back to you as we continue to discuss this particular phenomenon. We'll go to our next caller. Caller, you at 4298. 4298, your thoughts. 4298.
Yes. football. Well, Dion obviously has a legacy in the sport, including baseball, actually. He has a professionalism and athleticism that's unequaled by a lot of people. And so, you know, his taking on trying to bring more prestige to the HBCUs was a great and honorable quest. So now, you know, 3 years later, I guess he's saying he's got to move on to another aspect of the struggle, I guess, in terms of his life and black people in general. So I don't know, I respect you know his decision. I have no problems ultimately. I mean, he has the right to self-determination and to be all he can be. And he may be able to do more from that spot than he was able to do from the interior. I don't know, in terms of helping athletes get to the professional level, which is what they're really after, the NFL. And so he's a rung in that ladder. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Stay on. We'll be coming back to you. And to our listening audience, this is MPH Radio. We're discussing Deion Sanders in Jackson State and his new job dealing with the University of Colorado, I believe. But what we want to do at this point in time, you know, this particular phenomenon offers or creates many contradictions that was earlier alluded to some of our participants today. I've raised maybe some of the concerns and contradictions. I'd like each one of y'all maybe to respond to it. One of the biggest contradictions that many people view from his leaving Jackson State University is that they felt like it was a sense of betrayal. They felt like the way he presented himself was not true based upon the way he left and not fulfilling his total contract of 4 years or more. To my participants today, what is your response to that position, Brother Alex?
Well, again, Brother Lee, we got to look at who Deion Sanders was to begin with. We saw him even have a reality show showing you another aspect of Deion. We saw him as a player on the field. And regardless of which team he was playing on, he was a center of attention. So when we look at who the man himself was, how much faith sometimes in someone that is self-centered to begin with? You know, a person can stand up and tell you anything. We've heard that before. And they can come up with the wildest of dreams and imaginations, promises that will never be kept. I looked at a athlete, and at that time when he was in the NFL, had not finished school. He went back to college, thank God, and did get his degree from another predominantly private black school. And, you know, when we look at to make that next move, there were a lot of African-Americans or blacks or whatever we want to call ourselves who helped Deion along the way, because he was an inexperienced coach. So when you have a lot of help, and as always, our community bands together to help because we want to see someone succeed. We don't want to tear them down. We try and build them up unless it's just so impossible to build them up. But we always try to build each other up in an accomplishment that even with learning on the job, that they can accomplish the task so that another can come the same way. But we extend criticism and sometimes overtly criticism on some that because they go a little bit further and saying what they will actually do. The commitment is a little bit wider. And for our notion, we think it may be longer. I don't see on the contract where it may have been extended that long. So had he came in and said, I will be here 10 years, I'll be here 20 years, then I would hold him accountable and leaving early. But people have an agenda that they seek out. If you go to a job interview, because you don't know whether that job is going to be for you or not. We don't know if Deion would have made it as a good coach or not. It wasn't foretold beforehand. So, because he was successful, and believe me, a lot of people thought that he would never win that many games, and especially, you know, this year. So, when you accomplish a goal and you move forward and you have the people's support, then yes, you're going to make a lot of people angry, mad, disgusted that you did something that you should not have done. And then when you start putting the shoes on others' feet and we find out others have done the same thing, whether our color or another, they have moved on. They have just used the first place they were at as a stepping stone to something greater. But by using the ones that he did at Jackson State, again, I only wish that he worked with them. Whether there was a problem between him and the staff of the university, there were a lot of things that he had to deal with in whatever meeting he was having with the administration. So he decided to move forward. And once he decided to make that commitment, then as far as I know, looking at his videos at Colorado State, he's all in. So what does he owe Jackson State? He owes them a lot. Yes, he owes them a lot. Now, how does he pay that bill? He pays that bill by continuing talking to that university, that coaching staff, the new one that comes in, helps them attain that goal where they can get better equipment. They can get more scholarships. They can get more dollars in TV revenue because he's at a platform now that he can see where they have a budget of $5, $6 million in equipment, you know, alone. Athletic department might be, I don't know, $10, $15, $20 million a year, whatever. So he's working with a budget now that he can explain back to someone else where the budget was a tenth of what he had to deal with and say, this is how you make a way out of what you got. But always keep fighting for more because more of the pie is out there. So as long as he continues, you know, that fight to bring more money back to Jackson State University and all HBCUs, I don't have a problem with what he did. I have a problem, yes, the way he did it, but I don't have a problem with why he did it. Just the way. Just the way. And I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Alice. Susie, your thoughts on the criticism that he misrepresented himself and intentions of coming based upon the way he left? In other words, many people call him a sellout. What do you think, Susie?
Okay. First of all, I don't understand why people don't see the positive that he did. And because Coach Prime, the fact that he came out of his pocket when he first went there to get things started, she was building a great HBCU. Even though it's basically the locker room or everything, but the thing of it is, at least it showed them that we can have the nicer things and that builds up our morale and we go out there and do what we have to do. And also, Coach Prime didn't use Jackson State. He elevated them because he did provide so much positiveness to the students and the university. And we couldn't have expected him to last at 10 years because even at 10 years, you still almost have the same scenario that you have now. At some point, he probably wouldn't want to make a change. And I'm assuming this change that he make, he sees a way in the future that he's not only going to help Jackson State, but he'll help other HBCUs. And lastly, when the last time we seen a college game day on TV for HBCU, just getting that one accomplishment, you know, it does a lot for all the schools, not just Jackson State. So I think he has an agenda, even though he went to Colorado, but still he can feel the rest of that agenda that he has for the HBCUs. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Going to caller 6029. Caller 6029. Again, the criticism, one of the criticism of him leaving is how he sold himself when he first came there. They think it was a misrepresentation. And many people see this move as a form of a sellout. What is your take on that perspective, caller 6029.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, brother, you know, just like anyone, you know, tending for, you know, a position, you put your best foot forward. So in that context, you say things that maybe not necessarily representative of what you really feel, but instrumental in you, you know, getting that job. So I think to that extent that I think he does what people do in terms of, you know, economic opportunity. I think that as far as, you know, being a sellout, you know, it's a very difficult thing. You know, one of the things is that I think there's a tendency for a lot of us to perceive everything or everyone as revolutionary. One thing we have to understand, Deion Sanders' history doesn't suggest anything in terms of being revolutionary about terms of the positions that he takes. So for us to simply expect Deion Sanders to step outside of his comfort zone and become a revolutionary of sorts, I think is sort of misplaced. So I think in that context, you know, Deion persona has always been one of a businessman. And so he's going to do what is in the best interest of Deion Sanders. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But if we think for 1 second that, you know, a businessman is going to put the interests of his people or the interests of the universities, or in particular HBCUs, ahead of, you know, his own personal happiness, then we're slightly missing the boat. So I think, in terms of being a sellout, I think is a very I don't see him being a sellout in the sense that, you know, if he's always been, his position always been one of, you know, personal attainment, you know, at least financially for him, then he's doing naturally what is in his best interest, which means to go to Colorado, you know, University of Colorado, in which, you know, more money, more visibility, more status. And certainly as a businessman, those are kind of attributes, the kind of things that you certainly want to avail yourself of. So in that context, he's not a sellout. He's doing what Deion Sanders does. And so I think for us, I think for the overwhelming public, we have to understand that the kind of revolutionary change that we see is not going to necessarily come from a person who, quote, is a businessman, nor is it going to come from people who position is that, you know, everything is fine in society, that you don't have to fight, that all you have to do is, you know, seek to elevate the goodness in people in terms of bringing about the kind of positive results you want to see in society. Those kind of people who continue to believe that are not going to be revolutionary. So revolutionaries understand that in terms of bringing about the kind of society you want to see, it's going to take struggle, sacrifice, and a businessman is simply not ready for that kind of struggle and sacrifice. And so we have to understand that. So in that context, Deion Sanders wasn't a sellout. He's just been Deion Sanders. And I think we have to fundamentally understand that. But if we want to see real change in society, then those of us who are revolutionary, certainly those who profess to be revolutionary, it seems that we have to do more in terms of bringing about the kind of results that we want to see in terms of better society.
Thank you, caller. We'll go to caller 4298. Was he a sellout? Caller 4298, your perspective.
Well, I think the caller 6029, the previous caller, put a proper perspective on in terms of the business and whether these are going to be a revolutionary or not. In terms of his relationship to the people and his struggle for overall betterment of the people. This business, and he's going to a school with a losing record, I understand, so he's going to have to somehow rejuvenate this school, and so that's what they're looking for. And I don't know if he's going to be successful or not. It's a challenge in and of itself that he has to deal with there. And so, well, he's moved on. That's what's happening. Thank you.
All right, thank you, caller. What we're going to do right now, if you have a comment, please hit 1, and we acknowledge your last phone number. We got another young man or woman who want to get in. We're going to take a caller. We normally don't do this. You're blocking your number, but we're going to let you in this time. You actually be respectful with your comments, and we'll bring in caller 1111. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your comments on the subject matter, 1111. Welcome.
Well, in regards to Deion Sanders, something else to take note of is that, unfortunately, when it comes to black coaches at Division One level, sometimes in a situation like Colorado, which was a once prominent college football program, they'll bring us to do the rebuild, and when we get momentum, we may get the short end of the stick. So I'm going to be very interested to see, even though they're celebrating notoriety and all that comes with someone of his stature taking over a program which has been in disarray for a while now, it'll be interesting to see when he gets the program in a winning condition in terms of what the reaction to Coach Prime will be.
That comment is a really interesting comment, because one of the things they alluded to in terms of him going to Colorado University is that question is, you know, how does that really, how will his leaving Jackson State benefit HBCUs or the African community, given the fact that you're going to a university where less than 1.6% of the students are Africans? And there's this whole question of that seems to be a tendency among us every time when European institutions are in trouble and need a bailout, we go and help them out but don't stay and stick with us. So how would y'all address that particular issue in terms of him bailing out this, may bail out this university who has a lot more wealth than the school he left? Brother Alex.
Okay, yes, Brother Lee. You know, that's been an age-old game to go ahead and get a big name, and especially, you know, a big name hero or college hero or professional hero to lead your program. I can right now name quite a few programs that have been in trouble, and then they hired a big name coach and they didn't turn the program around. And instead of turning it around, they sunk it down even further. So just because you have a big name, and like I say, Dion is an unproven coach. He hasn't been around. He hasn't been around coaching staff. He hadn't learned the offenses and defenses and different things that other black coaches have stood in waiting for years. So when he got hired by Jackson State, I was also optimistic of what he would do there as a program. But we have to realize that, you know, you look for competent staff, not just you. You have to start checking the boxes on assistant coaches. You have to start checking the boxes on strengthening coaches that teach the young men how to take care of their bodies. You have to talk to the young men to prepare their minds for the physicality of the game itself. You have to talk to them about being injured on that football field, which may cause your career to be ended. You have to talk to these young men about going forth with the business end of, if you make it to the NFL, what to do with the money that you make and who to make investments with. There's so much to being a coach that we take for granted, that we just look at the name's sake. But there's so much to being called coach, because a coach to a football player, as they often say, is like a father, and the father I never had. So when we look at, did he come there to save grace, or did he come there to flounder, to say that there's another one that could make it in the big leagues? We have to look at that also, not as the savior sometimes, but as the goat. And I don't mean the greatest of all time. I mean the goat that couldn't make it. So he also had that label on him to say, yeah, you can make it in the little leagues among the small-time colleges, but you couldn't make it in the big leagues, a big-time college. So Dion has to be smart enough to make sure that he has all the boxes checked to his best ability, so that he can not only get quality players, but he can get quality coaching also up under him. Because that's what makes the game. You know, you're not out there by yourself. You're just the name of everything. But you have to have qualified people surrounding you. And then you take those qualified people and develop the talent that you have. Because you may not have a good first season. You might not have a first, second season. And maybe even a third or fourth. But maybe eventually you can turn the things around by good recruitment. But you have to keep qualified personnel under you and surrounded by you to make good decisions. You're going to butt heads. I'm pretty sure he's going to butt heads with the athletic director there. I'm pretty sure he's going to butt head with the chancellor and anybody else once they start losing. But if he started winning, he would be carried on their shoulder as their savior. So we have two ways to look at this thing. Is he going there to accomplish a goal, or is the goal for him to fail? And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Alan. You can bring in caller 6029. I'd like to get your response again, caller 6029. One of the accusations or criticism of him leaving and going to the Colorado is that seeing like we playing the same old game in which if the school has less than 1% of its student population been Africans, the argument is the only Africans that are basically going to be coming to the school are athletes. So, again, we're only talking about exploiting bringing in African athletes and not necessarily improving the overall narrative of African students having access to these so-called upper European universities. Is this just a continuation of the same old story we have seen before? It's using athletes as a means to an end. Call us 6029.
I think it is. I think it is a means to an end. There's no question about it. I think the recruitment of Deion Sanders speaks to one very real point, and that is the question in terms of economics. And let's be very, very clear. Deion is going to, just in terms of his own visibility, you know, his status as a former NFL player, that alone is going to secure a lot of TV time. And we got to be very, very clear on that. Now, as far as, you know, the recruitment of athletes, one of the things that are very clear, Deion has a platform in terms of bringing in some of the best talent in the country, simply on his name alone. And I think the University of Colorado simply understands that. In that context, when we talk about the numbers of African students or students of color at that university, certainly you're absolutely correct. The number of to the extent that that number is going to grow is going to be in athletics. In terms of, you know, making the university accessible to increasing numbers of African or people of color who are not athletes, probably negligible. And so clearly, you know, Deion, as far as the university is concerned, Deion's purpose of being in first and foremost is all about the economics. Whether or not he's a quality coach, whether or not he's capable in terms of achieving on that level, is really not the point for them. Because when you start talking about acumen in terms of people's ability to coach, and certainly there are many, many others you could simply tap, you know, as a head coach of a major college football program who understand the game is much better than Deion's. But that's not the issue. The issue is in terms of what kinds of monies can a school benefit from having someone like Deion there, you know, at their institution. And so clearly, you know, I think the economic considerations is the biggest motivation in terms of having Deion there, anything else in the world. One of the things I think was very, very interesting was that there was some players who, as a result of Deion coming there, are transferring. Students who actually see him as somewhat of a sellout. And in fact, it would be very interesting to actually talk to these young people to find out why they were adamantly opposed to Deion Sanders coming to Colorado. These young people know something in which, you know, the media is not conveying or these young people are not talking about. But mere fact that the license decided they're not going to play, they're going to transfer out of Colorado because Deion is there, I think that in of itself says a lot in terms of, you know, those students understanding Colorado's real motivation and that perhaps they feel put off by the fact that there's another situation where, you know, this large university is going to use this black man for the sole purpose of, being enriched monetarily, but at the same time do enough to address the systemic issues in terms of the low level, low numbers of African people who actually attend that university. So I think that, you know, for the universities, it's pretty simple. I think it's economics. And so I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting whether he win or lose. I think inevitably what's going to happen, you know, he's not going to be there long term. I don't see Deion being at Colorado, you know, for in excess of 10 years. I don't think that's going to happen, even for that long. I think what's going to happen once they establish the kind of visibility for the university that they're seeking, once they bring the kind of dollars that benefit to their program, I think Deion's uselessness will be over. So I think in that context, I think it's, you know, at that point, it's time for Deion to go. So it's going to be very interesting in terms of how it plays itself out. But my guess is that, you know, he's not going to be there long term, irrespective of his record, whether he win or lose. I don't think that's the issue. I think the monetary issue is the issue.
You're listening to MPH Radio. We're discussing Deion Sanders, Jackson State University, and HBCU. This is a part one of a two-part series. What we're going to do right now for all our calling participants on the line, we're going to ask each one of y'all to think about, as we look at this phenomenon, what is a lesson that we can learn from this? And once we have done that, we can start making our closing for today's program, and we'll pick this up 2 weeks from now. We come on every other bi-weekly, and you can listen to MPH Radio when we take upon this task again on the 24th at 1 p.m., the 24th of December. And at this point in time, to close out this subject discussion, we'd like to hear your point of view by just sharing with us on some kind of note of if we had to think about one lesson that we are taking away from this particular phenomenon, what would that lesson be? Live with our caller 111, we bring you back in. Your response to that question, caller 111. I got back. We lost caller 111. Let's go to caller 4298. 4298. What lesson can we take from this particular phenomenon?
Yeah, well, we know that good intentions don't always work out like everyone who hears them thinks they should work out. So, you know, when we speak, you know, we must qualify our message. I think, you know, Deion, you know, some people feel like he promised that he was going to be there more or less. That was the implication of when he was going to make these HBCUs more prosperous. And so, you know, there's a lesson to be learned there in terms of presentation of the interest and how you pursue your interest. But
thank you, Carla.
All right, yeah, thank you,
Carla. We'll next go to caller 6029. If you had to think of one lesson at this point in time that we can learn from this phenomenon, what would that be, caller 6029?
Quickly, visibility doesn't necessarily mean revolutionary, and we had to remember that lesson.
Well, succeed. Thank you, caller. And we now, Brother Alex, we come to you, your thoughts.
Well, Mr. Robinson, again, I have to look at and say, thank God for HBCUs, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have an avenue to start with. So we got a conversation because of these historic black colleges. And when we make promises and commitments to them, whether we're outstanding athletes, we're educators, doctors, lawyers, or whatever, we're the alumni of those universities. And in our hearts, not just morally, but in our hearts, we have to give back. And we have to give back with a good conscience. It's not that they deserve what we have. but we have to share in our knowledge of the world itself, of how we travel back and forth between the two worlds that exist in America, because that's all about HBCUs. You're in two different worlds. So we can't kid ourselves and say that the other world don't exist and that it has an agenda against us. So we have to look forward and say we do the best that we can with the best that we have, and we continue to grow as a people. We move forward. We don't move backwards. Mr. Sanders got an opportunity to do maybe what few African Americans will get an opportunity to do. How he uses this opportunity is up to him. I hope that he continues to share his knowledge of what he's going through to other historically black colleges, because your commitment was to them to uplift and build them up also. I hold him to that promise that he made at Jackson State to put us in a greater spotlight where we can get that money that's out there that we don't get today. So that exposure of him being the athlete he is, maybe he will get some recruits. Maybe he won't. Maybe he'll get some victories. Maybe he won't. But I will support him and his program and hope that the young man makes a difference in somebody's life, because it's more than football. We see athletes hurt and discouraged every day. As long as he takes care and mentors those young men that go on to aspiring careers after football, if he brings other people to the universities, if he increases the enrollment there, and they leave with college degrees, Dion has satisfied me. If he takes care of those young men and makes sure that their futures after football are viable, good community men, Dion will have satisfied me. So there's a lot of things that we have to look at and say, is this a blessing or can it be a curse? I'm praying for a blessing and not a curse to say that he couldn't accomplish, so we close the door on another. And that's all I have to say.
We'd like to thank you, Alex. Thank all our listeners, supporters, and participants to today's program, part one of a two-part series, Dion Sanders, Jackson State University, and HBCUs. We'll be back on the 24th of December, 1 p.m. Join us. We also like to send a shout out and prayer out to our sister Mary. We know she's still going to recovery. She's still healing, and we wish the best for her. And we'd like to remind everyone to come and join us along with the African Wedding Association as we bring in the new year 2023 as we travel to Cuba. If you have not filled out your application, please do so by emailing the African Awareness Association 2@gmail.com. This is a bucket list that one of our co-founders, Emmanuel Jordan, wanted to do. So we're going to be going in his honor, his name. So come and join us and support us. Until next time on the 24th, we'd like to thank you for joining us and helping us to fill in this aspect of one of our missing pages of history. We'll see you on the 24th. We thank you.
we are here, we are here. Bombs over Baghdad, trying to get something we never had. Let's start with a good dad. So real, but it's so sad. And while we burning this incense, we gon' pray for the innocent. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria. In the mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls are brought together so that we can love each other. Brother, we are here. How we gonna save the nation? With no support for education.